in, I think it's Radio Mirror, there's an article, I'm blanking on which detective it was, but it was written from the point of view of the actor's wife, talking about him at home being domestic. So there's definitely something about taking the edge off of these detective characters. But yeah, Lorraine Tuttle, she was just this amazing actress. She was in everything. What I object to in that photo mostly was them calling Effie a spinster, because she's she seems so young, I guess the difference is that I don't see her as being cringeworthy exactly. The character sometimes, but I find her a really interesting.
Sometimes the use of the word spinster is a prediction, not just occurrence.
I guess my thing is I read a lot of the I read the Effie Sam. Relationship is kind of like an office marriage where, like, it's kind of implied that, you know, maybe eventually if he ever retired, maybe they'd get married. You know, she's waiting for him.
Yeah, that was my question, because don't they
kiss repeatedly?
Slightly risky territory every now and then, and it's sort of implied that Effie's there whenever Sam wants her, but he's mostly a gentleman.
Yeah, but she worships him. She's in love with him. This is my reading. She's in love with him. She probably wants to marry him. But she lives with her mother, so she's safe. He wouldn't, damage her. So yeah.
I find it interesting your running with the broadcast with the oral history. Back in around 1950, I think it was Columbia University and the Oral History Association made up the rules for oral history. Their first big client, and we're talking about big being thousands and thousands of dollars, was the Broadcast Pioneers Association. And the one of the first results of the 50 or more interviews that they did under that contract was a 1956 American Heritage article, which is a great article. And the thing is, they did not know that the recordings were not being saved, that all they were getting was the transcript. And Kathy Hines, who was the librarian of Broadcast Pioneers Library, told me this story. She said, when the association found out, livid with rage would be just an understatement that the recordings had not of the Broadcast Pioneers had not been saved, because they made the contract to do those interviews so that they would have the sound recordings of all of these Broadcast Pioneers.
Your irony.
And that's all you have is a little couple of minute snippets of each of the people, and they were furious. And we had been discussing that in the 1970s at the Association for Recorded Sound Collections. By that time, all of us had shamed the Oral History Association and literally shamed them into maintaining the tapes. That's the only way we could do it.
Yes,
thank you for doing it.
Well, these are fantastic papers, and sort of building off of Brent's comment, one thing that strikes me that is a sort of challenge for this kind of work, and we're all struggling with, I think, aesthetically, is to what extent, when you look at a radio script, do you have to draw on a kind of a literary, the tradition of textual theory, interpretive theory, around ideas, for example, of authorial intention versus some kind of a new criticism where the scholar is the definitive reader. This is my reading of the grain of the voice or the queerness of this text or whatever. Or something that is more kind of post-structural. And we're dealing with sometimes scripts that we don't know if this was actually the final version that went out over the air at all. Or recordings that may or may not be may not be the master. So these are just challenges to the kind of aesthetic historical work we we all want to do, and I just wondered if you might share with us a little bit how you think about textual interpretation in that sense when you're looking at a radio script or an oral history transcript.
Mm-hmm. Which you're all answering. That's a great question.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I mean, I guess by the end I decided that, you know, none of the things that I study could tell me anything about the time in which they were made, but they were enormously pleasurable to play with, to use, to go in a Barthesian direction. I just think it's the stuff that is still relevant and engaging and enticing and intriguing is the stuff that is the remnant. That's what survives, the ways it speaks to me, the ways it sends me on goose chases. So it's the attempt to find some kind of remnant of ideological battle and the frustrations of it. To me, that was really the only thing that was coherent, rather than the ability to reconstruct something definitive. And I don't know if that's because I ran into so many problems with this particular thing or if that is just a generalizable kind of throwing up of one's hands. But it's a pleasurable one.
I mean, it's interesting, and it's a question that I deal with this also in terms of what's on the page and also in terms of the, you know, my listening, my critical listening position, because I'm coming at this trying to, from a feminist media studies point of view, and this is a pre-second wave feminism period that I'm studying, so it's interesting to see, am I reading too much into this? Am I reading not enough into this? And I guess at the end of the day, the best I can do is say, this is what I have, this is the approach I'm using, and I can, because I can spend my life questioning whether or not this script is the be-all and end-all, but at a certain point you have to write. I'm not sure if that's the answer you're looking for, but with Candy Matson, there are several copies of scripts, but most of them are just different people's copies, so they're fairly consistent. And that is nice in that I can verify that there are different, if the same line is edited out of two or three different people's copy of the script, I can pretty much assume that it probably was edited out of the final broadcast. And then I can also compare, the existing episodes that are there.
Jennifer's
are always made while the show is on the air.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'd like Jennifer to come.
I guess I just want to say that the one of the problems of the work that we do in radio is all of the absences and the gaps. And I think that as scholars, it makes you a little bit more tentative, a little more less eager to jump to conclusions. And I think that quote that was in my paper about Alessandro Portelli, that looking at what people thought they were doing, is something that's going to stick with me for a while, as a scholar trying to, because I see my process as sort of taking all these little bitty scraps of paper, whether it's from a production note or a script or a thing, and putting together and trying to figure out what were the most likely ways in which these discourses were circulating around. And that's about all I can do, because I don't know how they've read them. And I didn't know how they listened to them or heard them. But then I got to get this paper done, so I'm guessing at what the circuit is,
We're going to have to wrap up soon, but in the back you had a question.
This problem of just favoring the transcript over the recording doesn't just apply to radio, it's much more widespread than that. When I was working on my MLS in the late 70s, we took a field trip to a presidential library, and I asked them if they had any sound recordings of the president. And they said, oh yes, and they're transcribing. I said, well, what do you do with the recordings? Discard them after the transcript. Like, having the written word is what's important, not having the recording.
No, that's not true. The recordings are kept.
No.
The recordings are kept. What library are you talking about?
Truman.
They got it. They've got the recording.
Okay.
Definitely Nixon. Definitely Nixon. Can agree that they have Nixon. Almost. What? Oh, no. Yours was wonderful.
On your Dudley mail.
It is.
What's what? Oh, it's the top of my USB drive. It's a monkey.
I didn't think we were gonna get such a good time.
Oh, sorry. I need to get my.
Oh, sure. Send it to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because somebody asked me to make this into an article.
It's not your fault. It's
brilliant.
Thanks.
I was there for 2 weeks, and I didn't think to ask until, like, the last 2 days.